to look at Psalm 21. Last week, we looked at Psalm 20, and we said that it was a royal psalm, okay, a psalm of the king. And you're going to see, and maybe you already have if you've been reading ahead, but you're going to see that Psalm 21 fits nicely right after Psalm 20. It seems like it's probably in sequential order. Psalm 20 is a prayer for the king, and Psalm 21 is the thanksgiving of the king, or the giving thanks of the king. He's responding here. So let's just read the psalm, and then we'll make our comments. Psalm 21, to the chief musician, a psalm of David. The king shall joy in thy strength, O Lord, and in thy salvation how greatly shall he rejoice. Thou hast given him his heart's desire, and hast not withholden the request of his lips, Selah. For thou preventest him with the blessings of goodness. Thou settest a crown of pure gold on his head. He asked life of thee, and thou gavest it him, even length of days forever and ever. His glory is great in thy salvation. Honor and majesty hast thou laid upon him, for thou hast made him most blessed forever. Thou hast made him exceeding glad with thy countenance. For the king trusteth in the Lord, and through the mercy of the Most High he shall not be moved. Thine hand shall find out all thine enemies. Thy right hand shall find out those that hate thee. Thou shalt make them as a fiery oven in the time of thine anger. The Lord shall swallow them up in his wrath, and the fire shall devour them. Their fruit shalt thou destroy from the earth, and their seed from among the children of men. For they intended evil against thee. They imagined a mischievous device, which they are not able to perform. Therefore shalt thou make them turn their back, when thou shalt make ready thine arrows upon thy strings against the face of them. Be thou exalted, Lord, in thine own strength. So will we sing and praise thy power. So, again, as you maybe listen to the psalm being read, or as you read it yourself, you just can't help but notice that this is the king's response to God's answered prayer on his behalf. As the psalm starts out, or I guess maybe as the psalm unfolds, it unfolds into really two parts. The first part is verses 1 through 6, and this is a place where the king is just giving thanks, and he's bringing up, he's recounting, he's mentioning all these different blessings that he's received from the hand of the Lord. And he's not just mentioning the blessings, he's giving thanks, or he's rejoicing in. He's acknowledging all the things that God has done for him. And we just have to assume from the psalm that he's talking about a particular circumstance that he's been in. Then whenever we get to verse 7, it takes a little bit of a turn, and he starts to talk about his trust in the Lord. And then the bulk of this last half is dedicated to David's rest in this reality that God will one day deal with all of his enemies. And then it ends in the same way that it begins, not the exact wording, but in the same tone. Be thou exalted, Lord, in thine own strength, so will we sing and praise thy power. So he starts out by saying that he shall joy in the strength of the Lord, and then it turns more into a communal praise at the end in verse 13 when he says, we will sing and praise thy power. So as we look at this psalm, we want to ask, the questions we've been asking. If you're not a member of Ripley and you're tuning in for the first time, this is more of a Bible study. It's not a full exposition of the psalm. It's meant to kind of stir your own thoughts and meditations so that as you go back, you can kind of glean from this psalm, maybe in a way you haven't before. And so we start by looking at the names of God that are used in this psalm. So there are two names, two different names that are used for God in this psalm. The first one is the name that we've seen in just about every one so far, and that is Lord, capital L-O-R-D. Yahweh, or what we how we pronounce that, Jehovah, and it just is the God of covenant. Okay, the second one is in verse 7, and it's here where David calls him the Most High, okay? For the king trusteth in the Lord, in verse 7, and through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. And so when we think about God as being the Most High, we think about the Exalted One, or the One who is above all, the Preeminent One. And so that's more of a title than it is a name, but those are the two that we have in this psalm as we try to think about how David is engaging God and how David is speaking to and about God. So the next question that we want to look at is, what do we learn about the human experience in a fallen world from Psalm 21? What do we learn about the human experience in a fallen world? Well, there were a few things here that were obvious, and then some of these I'm contrasting with what we actually see in the psalm, and what we'll look at whenever we see what we learn about faith. And so the first one is this, that in a fallen world, we do not always take the time to bring our requests to God. I don't know about you, but whenever I read Psalm 21, it's convicting to me that as the king is just elaborating on God's deliverances in his life, on as he's rejoicing in God's specific answered prayers, God granted him the desires of his heart. He gave him honor. He gave him he answered his prayers in several different ways, his kindness, his goodness, and all these kinds of things. And in a fallen world, you know, we don't always take the time to bring our requests to God, do we? And that's one of the reasons why our prayer life doesn't always sound like David's prayer in Psalm 21. It's not because necessarily that David's made out of something you're not made out of. If you're a believer, if you're indwelled by the Holy Spirit, then you're equipped even in a better way than what David was equipped. And yet we read the Psalms and we think that's hard to believe because David prays in ways that just we don't even scratch the surface. Well, one of the challenges that we have to acknowledge and one of the basic problems that we face in our own prayer life is just that we don't always take the time to bring our requests to the Lord. In a fallen world, we are tempted to be self-sufficient. We are tempted to just be embarrassed to acknowledge that we need help. We're tempted to be cynical and kind of have a default position that it's not really going to do anything anyway. We're tempted to all kinds of reasons not to bring our requests to the Lord. And this kind of follows up on our second point on what we learn about the human experience in a fallen world, and that is, in a fallen world, we don't always take the time to rejoice in God's goodness to us. Now, you know, if the first one kind of gets our steps on our toes a little bit, the second one really will, especially out of the spotlight that Psalm 21 shines on this. I mean, the king here, David here, is just overcome with joy. And it's not just joy in general, it's joy specifically based on particular attributes of the Lord, particular blessings that God has given him. He's very specific, particularly in the first six verses of this psalm, as to what it is that he's rejoicing over in the Lord. And so, you know, whenever we made our first point, it doesn't mean that we never bring our requests to the Lord, right? I mean, we do at times, and during our scheduled times of prayer, if you have a scheduled quiet time and you do that, then that's something that you'll do. But isn't it a temptation just to kind of move on to the next prayer once the previous one has been answered? Isn't it difficult at times? Isn't it so easy to be distracted and not acknowledge that God has answered the prayer that you've been praying? I don't mean this in a cynical way, and I'm not saying prove me wrong, but I wonder how many of us, after the shelter in place and the quarantine and the whole drama of the coronavirus is over with, I wonder how many of us will forget to thank God for that. Now, obviously, whenever we gather together and we're corporately together, then we'll thank God and rejoice in that together. But brothers and sisters, in a fallen world, and again, I'm not saying that to try to shame or smear us. I'm saying that to say, in our weakness, we can pray that the Lord would bless us with things, and then when He does, we don't take the time to thank Him for it. There are several reasons for that. Two reasons that I've just jotted down that keep us from coming back and rejoicing in the Lord is, number one, we're pretty entitled people, aren't we? In other words, we think we deserve what we're asking for. I mean, why would we ask for it if it wasn't reasonable, right? Why would we ask for it if it was something that was that we weren't entitled to? The second thing is, many times, our rejoicing is drowned out by our complaints, right? So that even after we get what we've been asking for, a lot of times our complaints are much bigger in our mind. The things that we don't have outweigh the things that we do. And so it chokes out this discipline. And that's what this is, this discipline of rejoicing in God's goodness. Listen, if you woke up this morning and you had air to breathe, it's because of the goodness of God. If the sun came up on you and you had access to its rays, it's because of the goodness and mercy of God. If you were able to have any sort of enjoyment, any level of enjoyment at all, it's because of the mercies of God. And so we ought to be characterized as a thankful people. But unfortunately, many times we think that thankful people are spontaneously thankful, and as we move into our third section, we'll find out that's not really the case. And then third, what do we learn about human experience in a fallen world? Well, in verses 8 through 12, we learn that the enemies of God are alive and well. Right? Verses 8 through 12 are dedicated to this reality that God will one day deal with His enemies. He will one day destroy them. He will one day judge them. He will one day take care of them, but not today, right? Today's not the day that He's referring to here. Now, there are times where God delivers a people from their enemy. Maybe that you have enemies that you need to be delivered from. But as a whole, God's enemies are alive and well, and God's enemies are also the enemies of His children. So we shouldn't be surprised when we're faced with these kinds of oppositions. So that's what we learn about human experience in a fallen world. Secondly, what do we learn about faith? What do we learn about faith? Well, number one, faith moves us to speak to God. Faith moves us to speak to God. And it sounds like a broken record, because almost every one of these psalms we've made that point. But it's so obvious that we miss it at times. If you're reading the George Mueller booklet, then maybe you've gotten to the part of the interview where George Mueller wants to pray for this man who has interviewed him for an hour, and he prays, and the man says, "It was just such a simple, plain prayer. There was nothing special about it. There was nothing dressed up about it. It was just a simple prayer that you would expect to hear a child pray." You see, George Mueller, this great man of prayer, knew that when it came to interacting with the Lord, he just needed to speak. To speak the things that were on his heart. He didn't have to dress him up. He didn't have to use a special language or a special tone. And so there didn't have to even be a special time. And so, brothers and sisters, what we learn about faith from this psalm and from all the others is that faith will move us to speak to God. Now think about that. How that's tied into something like Hebrews 11:6, where it says, in order to please him, we have to believe that God is. Right? If we believe that God is, if we believe that God is a person, that God is real, then we'll speak to him. Right? If we don't, then we'll just ignore him. Now, we could go on and we could say a lot more about that, but I'm going to leave that there. Faith moves us to speak to God. And then secondly, faith moves us to ask God for things. Faith moves us to ask God for things. You'll notice that Psalm 21 could have never been written had David not been asking God to do some things. So he's going to rejoice in his strength, in his salvation. How greatly shall he rejoice? The word salvation here in the psalm is just a word that means deliverance. Okay, it means that God had delivered David from something. Now, it is the same word that we use when we're thinking about the salvation of our souls, but David's not necessarily giving praise for the salvation of his soul right here. He's giving praise to God for some sort of a deliverance that he had experienced, I guess, previously to this. But how much more would we have reason to rejoice in God's salvation in our life? Then he goes on in verse 2, "Thou hast given him his heart's desire, and hast not withholden the request of his lips, Selah." Remember what the word Selah means? Well, it means to pause and ponder, right? It means just stop for a minute and think about that. The Lord had given him his heart's desire and had not withheld the request of his lips. Well, of all the problems that we have in prayer and all the difficulties that we have in prayer, James really is onto something whenever he tells us that one of the problems is that we have not because we ask not, right? Faith moves us to ask. Faith moves us to this position of dependence upon God. Faith moves us to come to God in a needy way because we realize if we're going to rejoice in God's strength, then we're going to want to be partakers of his strength as well. If we're going to rejoice in the salvation of the Lord, then we want to experience the salvation of the Lord here and now, right? If we're going to rejoice in the Lord's goodness and the Lord's blessing, then we want to be partakers of the Lord's goodness and the Lord's blessing. And part of what that means, just at a very fundamental level, is that we're going to be asking for it. It's not inappropriate to ask God for his goodness, for his blessings, for his kindness. It's not inappropriate to ask God to strengthen you or to even ask him to give you the desire of your heart if you're desiring something out of a good motive. And even if you're not, God knows how to weigh all that out. And so we see in this psalm, he's asking for strength. He's asking for salvation. In verse 2, he's giving praise for these answered prayers. Verse 3, it's God's goodness and kindness that David has rejoiced in and no doubt had asked for. And then when you get down to verse 6, it says, "Thou hast made him most blessed forever. Thou hast made him exceeding glad with thy countenance." You see here David saying, "You've made me glad," or "You've made me rejoice in your presence." Okay, the word countenance there is referring to God's presence in David's life. Well, brothers and sisters, we get just halfway through Psalm 21, and we've got a pretty good prayer list, don't we? We've got several things here that we need to be praying for that maybe we haven't been. And we've got several encouragements here that might help motivate us to have a renewed zeal in coming to God and asking God for requests. Again, as God's children relate to him as a father, we are in a position of dependence on him. Okay, so it's not a display of selfishness, or it's not a display of pride or any of those things to come and ask God for things. It's a position of neediness, realizing that we are empty, but our Father is full. And so faith moves us to ask. And then third, faith moves us to rejoice in the Lord and in the Lord's blessings to us. We're moved to rejoice in his blessings and his presence in our life. And we just named those off as far as the Lord giving you strength whenever you realize that you do not have the strength in and of yourself to continue in whatever path you're on or under whatever burden you're on. The Lord blessing you with salvation. Now, whether we're talking here about the way David uses it or the way we would use it, you know, if you have been made to know the Lord and made to know that heaven is your home and that you've been delivered from the wrath of God and from an eternal hell, brothers and sisters, we've always got a reason to rejoice. We've always got something to give thanks for. And it goes on from there, because if we've been delivered from the wrath of God and the punishment for our sin has been laid on Jesus Christ, then if God would give us his Son, would he not with him give us all things? And so we move into other things like just answer prayer. Do you have a desire that's on your heart that you realize is not a wicked desire? It wouldn't be an abomination to ask God for it as far as it being something sinful. Do you have a desire on your heart? Then bring it before the Lord and then rejoice when the Lord answers that prayer. And so rejoicing. Number four, faith moves us to trust in the Lord. Moves us to trust in the Lord. That's out of verse 7. The king trusteth in the Lord, and through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. Now, one of the things that you'll notice out of this verse is that it puts two things together, and that is trusting in God or trusting in God's character brings stability in an individual's life. You see what David says? He says in verse 7, the king trusts in the Lord, and so what's the result of that? Well, through the mercy of the Most High, he shall not be moved. He will be grounded. He will be stable. And one of the ways that we are built up, or maybe we should say one of the ways that we are guarded by faith, one of the results of that is stability. That is stability of mind, stability in your spiritual walk with the Lord, just stability in your life. If you trust in the Lord, then you're going to be walking with the Lord. You're going to be obeying the Lord. You're going to be seeking the Lord. You're going to be dependent upon the Lord. You're going to be speaking and asking the Lord for what you stand in need of. You're going to be interacting with Him on a regular basis. And so faith moves us to trust in the Lord. Number five. Today you still wrestle with the world and the flesh and the devil, but one of these days, God is going to deal with all of his enemies, and we're going to be delivered not only from the power of sin, not only from the penalty of sin, but also the presence of sin. And that's a hope that we can lay hold of, and faith helps us to grasp that. That's verses 8 through 12. So the third big question is, how can we engage God through this psalm? How can we engage God through this psalm? Well, number one, we become intentional about asking God for help when we need it. Okay, we become intentional about it. Now, sometimes we think, well, you know, I need to make a change, and I know I need to grow in this area or in that area, and so, you know, whenever I think about it, I'll just pray that the Lord will bless me to grow in it. Well, usually that doesn't work very well. If we're going to make changes, if we're going to grow, those things have to be intentional. And so, a good place to start is, what are your current needs, right? Where are your current struggles? Where is it that you see yourself deficient or in need of help? And this is one of those areas where it's very helpful to just put pen to paper and make a list, maybe keep an ongoing list of things that you need. Areas that you can pray for yourself, for other people, but it's an attempt to get very intentional. Now, a lot of times we are deficient in this area, not because of a lack of motivation, not because of a lack of dedication, but just a lack of memory. You just can't remember all the things that you realized you stood in need of throughout the day. Many of us live busy lives. We have different interactions, and at different times, we, you know, things come up. And so unless you're just praying on the spot as those things come up, which would be another good intentional discipline to use, then it's helpful to put pen to paper on your needs so that you can have a fresh reminder of those things as you come before the Lord. Secondly, in this, how can we engage God through this psalm? We become intentional about giving thanks and rejoicing in the Lord and His blessings. And so, again, this is another area where, you know, putting pencil to paper is very, very helpful. Where in your life have you noticed God strengthening you? Have you been delivered from sickness, pain, mental distress, financial distress, anything like that recently? Has your soul been delivered from the wrath of God? Any of those things. And we rejoice intentionally over that. We meditate and rejoice. Third, has God granted any of your prayer requests lately? In other words, have you prayed to God for something to happen and He's answered in the affirmative? He gave you what you asked for. Well, then that's times for rejoicing. Now, we could go a little further than that and say that even when God says no or not yet, that's still a time to rejoice, because in God's good, sovereign, providential plan for our life, He knows what we need when we need it. But the point here is that we're trying to be intentional about showing gratitude and rejoicing in God's blessings. What about, have you experienced God's kindness or His goodness to you today? And if you have, in what ways? Specifically name or write out even the small tokens of God's kindness in your life today, tomorrow, and the next. And then once you've done that, give thanks to God for them. Have you experienced the comfort of God's presence lately? You know, maybe your circumstances are not very good right now. Maybe you're experiencing some difficulties, but you realize, or you've been able to find comfort in the reality that God will never leave you. He will never forsake you. Maybe God's presence was shown to you through a hymn, or maybe you were made to rejoice in your scripture reading this morning, or in some other kind of way. But have you experienced the comfort of His presence? And if you have, then thank Him for it. Rejoice in it. Take the time to intentionally cultivate this attitude of gratitude toward the Lord and His blessings. Number three, how do we engage God through this psalm? Well, we become intentional about trusting in the Lord. Okay? Notice all these things are intentional, practical applications. So here's a good question for us to ask on a regular basis. What aspect of God's character do I need to be trusting right now? Or maybe a better question is, what aspect of God's character does He want me to be looking to, depending on right now? Am I in a position of weakness? Then His strength would be a good thing for me to be trusting in. Am I in a position to where I need, you know, I'm confused. I feel like I'm coming up short when it comes to having wisdom. Well, then God's full of wisdom, right? Am I in a position of needing mercy? Am I in a position of needing... You just go through the character qualities of God. And one of the things that we've mentioned again and again as we think about what it means to trust in God is that we do not trust God in these fuzzy concepts about God, but in specific biblical realities about God. And this is going to require some meditation. And so whenever we meditate on God's strength, then we trust in His strength, and that ability is strengthened. It's like putting ammo into our ability to trust. We think about God's kindness, and we meditate on different passages that have to do with God's kindness or His wisdom and all those other things. And all of a sudden, our trust in the Lord is strengthened, and it's growing as we are involved in those kinds of exercises. And so we are able to grow in our trust. We're able to grow in our ability to give thanks and to rejoice. We're able to grow in our ability to ask God for particular things through intentional, disciplined practice. And really, whenever you look at the Psalms, we've mentioned this again and again, but that's what you find. You find David, or a psalmist, who's taking a reality, or maybe a few realities about God, and he's meditating on how those realities intersect with his current experience and his current circumstance. And so for this one, the Lord had delivered David, and so David's meditating on all of God's goodness, kindness, blessings, and all of those things for him. And so that's where we're going to end tonight. I hope that this has been a blessing to you, and I hope that you'll take a little bit of time to put pen to paper and do a few of these exercises to get intentional about asking God, about rejoicing in the Lord, and about trusting in the Lord. God bless.